Legendary dancer, director, and choreographer Gene Kelly brought astonishing grace and athleticism to the movies. His engaging on-screen personality is so accessible, we certainly feel like we know him. In fact, we perhaps know very little, according to his widow. In her live one-woman show, Gene Kelly, The Legacy, Patricia Ward Kelly, his wife and biographer, gives us the story. Taking audiences behind the scenes, she presents an intimate portrait of this innovative artist who gave us such iconic works as An American in Paris and Singing in the Rain. Using film clips and unreleased audio recordings, personal keepsakes, and stories he shared with her over their decade together, Patricia Kelly shows us the man who changed the look of dance on film and became one of the world's most beloved stars. Her show, Gene Kelly, The Legacy, will be at The Egg in Albany on Saturday, September 19th at 7:30, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Patricia Ward Kelly to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
A great pleasure, and we're going to tag team you this morning. Rosemary Armeo held over from the panel to join us this morning and to help me in the questioning.
To help you, I totally horned in on this because of personal interest.
Fair enough.
It's a great pleasure to have you both here. How did this all get started for you? It becoming comfortable for you to go on a stage and talk about your late husband?
I started doing it soon after Gene died. I started going around the world, actually, and speaking. People asked me to come and talk about him. But I created this particular show for what would have been his 100th birthday in 2012. And the Academy of Motion Pictures always honors, they do the legends, and they tend to do the centenary. And I really wanted Gene to be represented the way he wished to be remembered, as opposed to how other people saw him. And so I created the show, and to their credit, the Academy let me produce it, direct it, and then stage it. And so it just kind of took off like Topsy. It's gone all around the world. We had the first show in Zurich in January, and I always say, if you build it, I will come. It's going on to Santa Fe and Lincoln, Nebraska, and it's wonderful because it really, as you said in your introduction, people look at Gene up on screen and love him. I mean, he's beautiful, he's gorgeous, he's incredibly talented. What they don't realize are that many, many dimensions behind him and behind that, and that he was really the true Renaissance man. I mean, here's a guy who spoke French, he spoke Yiddish, he read a book a day, he was an economics major, he read Latin, wrote poetry. He was a true romantic, and it's one of the things I have in the show are the valentines that he used to leave sprinkled all around the house for me on Valentine's Day. And I had the great pleasure and privilege of recording him nearly every day for over 10 years. He brought me out to write his memoir and then married me in the process. So I have this record that no one has, and no one has really heard Gene on Gene. And he used to sing to me at night. That was often one of the ways that he revealed some of the most personal and intimate things about himself. He'd revert to American popular song. And so I have excerpts of him singing that are pretty potent things.
What do you think is the main thing that we don't know or we don't get about Gene Kelly just from what we see on the screen?
In fact, I was just speaking in Long Beach and several people came up to me and asked me if Gene ever choreographed anything. He wanted to be known more for being behind the camera than being in front of the camera. He really wanted to be known for changing the look of dance on film and for his choreography and his use of the camera in capturing dance. And a lot of people ask if he ever directed anything. They forget he directed Singing in the Rain and On the Town and Hello, Dolly later. And so and they forget how revolutionary he was, I think, or they never knew. They never knew that he was combining animation and live action with Jerry the Mouse, and that he was dancing with himself in CoverGirl, and how we kind of take it for granted instead of looking at these things 63, 70 years later, see how extraordinary they were.
You said that you met him because you came to write his memoirs. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? How did it turn from professional relationship to something more?
People always ask that. That's the great curiosity. But I wrote a television special about the Smithsonian, and Gene ended up being the host narrator. And the grand irony in all of this is that I didn't know who Gene Kelly was. I was a very nerdy Herman Melville scholar. And in fact, the time I had been in Albany before this was to do research on the Ganzevoorts and on Melville's time here in Albany. So I had my nose in a book and wasn't going to the movies. And so I think that was honestly the best way to meet Gene, because I came with no preconceived notion and we worked together. And my pet study in graduate school was etymology. It was word origins and poetry. And those happened to be Gene's pet studies. So we sat in a room together quoting poetry back and forth.
Does this mean you did not dance with him ever?
Well, that's a question. I do answer that in the show. And, we started out, we did start out by, it was just a mutual love of words and language. And I fell in love with his, with language and this erudite gentleman and this Pittsburgh street kid, this wonderful mix. I was enchanted. And then he brought me out to California to write his memoir. And then I must say, then the romance did develop after that. So,
he was married three times. Is there a commonality between the three of you?
That's funny. I'm known as the third and final wife. That was my headline. And my father said it sounds like he didn't want any more wives. But commonality, that's an interesting question. He married two dancers previously. I was not a dancer and a writer instead. He married two kind of pony dancers, and his second wife was his assistant, who was absolutely critical behind the camera. Gene, because he was directing these shows, needed to have key people behind the camera to make sure he was hitting his marks and understood musical beats and the movement of the camera. So he had Jeannie Coyne, who became his wife, and Carol Haney, who went on to great fame with Pajama Game and in the early days, Stanley Donen, who went on to be a co-director and choreographer with him.
Patricia Ward Kelly is our guest. We're talking about her one-woman show, Gene Kelly, The Legacy.
When you are helping your husband write his memoir, are you, there has to be a part of you that wants to ask questions just for you.
Oh, boy, these are great questions. This is really fun. The thing was, with Gene, because he was essentially a blank slate to me, I really had no knowledge of him or his work, and very little knowledge of American popular song. Frank Sinatra was, I didn't understand until Gene sat me down on the couch at night to explain the differences in why Frank Sinatra was such an extraordinary singer and why arrangements made such a big difference. And I really had to get up to speed, and it was like, I always compare it to Sheila Graham and Scott Fitzgerald. She wrote the book The College of One, and for me, it was essentially a College of One. I was a student and getting up to speed, and so, but then as our relationship evolved, and then I'm there, and I'm 5 years into it, and I'm beginning to see there's. He'll say, well, that was the saddest part of my life. And I'll say, but wait, you told me something else was the saddest part. And it was only as our relationship developed that he began to let down the guard. He was a man of great reserve. You only know as much about him as he allowed you to know. And it was very little. So he kind of skimmed the surface. And I always say you had to marry him to get the story, because it took years for him to let down the guard. And one of the great examples of that is that I was trying to get a story about his mother and write a chapter about his mother. And all I could get is, I never would have had a career in dance without my mother. But about 5 years into our relationship, one day out of the blue, he said, I'll never forgive my mother for murdering my father. And the whole shift, the depression hit, and his father was out of a job. And Gene felt that the mother had basically emasculated the father in that process.
Do you think that openness came from age as well?
I think the openness, quite frankly, came from having this little gadfly living with him. I don't think it came with age. I think it's quite counter to age. And I have to give him a lot of credit, because I don't think many men of that stature and that age, he didn't have to reassess his life. But he had this person there every day, 24 hours a day for a decade, asking him and probing. And I think also trust. He began to trust that I would treat his legacy with care.
I have a sex question and a Hillary question.
A sex Okay, good.
Okay, so you're,
I love this.
You are
this
married.
Is only getting better.
You are married to the most graceful and beautiful man possibly in the world.
Yes,
you know, there are many.
I agree.
So did you feel jealousy when other women were around him or talked about him? And I'm sorry, but intimate moments, did you ever feel like clumsy or an aloof because you're with him?
You know, you ask about other women, and it's very cute because when I speak in a lot of schools, I show film clips, and there'll be a great moment where he's kissing Sid Charisse very passionately or Judy Garland, and the kids raise their hand and they go, does that bother you when you see that? And I usually say I wasn't born when that was happening. But it's really interesting because Gene was with some of the most extraordinary women in the world, and I just feel like, oh my gosh, he was with the most beautiful, bright, intelligent, capable women. I just feel privileged to have been among the number of women that he chose to be in his life. So I don't, there's no jealousy at all. I can't imagine. Also, you know, I had Gene at an extraordinary point in his life. I think a lot of people will say, don't you wish you had met him before, you know, before when he was in his peak in his career. And I really think that I had the privilege of having Gene in repose. I had him at a point where he didn't feel the need to prove himself anymore. He didn't need to. He was reflective and contemplative, and it was a really special time. Now for the intimate moments. Did I feel clumsy? No, it's interesting. It was very much Pygmalion. It was a kind of... Gene actually liked playing. He even admitted that he liked to play Pygmalion. And so it was a great deal of instruction for me and instruction in how do you walk, how you carry yourself, how you present yourself, and how you dress. He loved a scarf on a woman, a kind of accoutrement, and a kind of presence, a sense of your own self. And so I learned a lot. I mean, I don't think most husbands sit on the couch with their wives at night and go through Vogue magazine, and Gene did. And he had dressed so many women in costumes and knew how a woman would move in a particular dress or skirt or an A-line skirt versus a bias cut. And he would say, this would look good on you. This would not work well on you. And
fascinating.
It was extraordinary. Down to makeup and hair. The hair had to be in a perfect chignon.
So right now, she's wearing a scarf. That's very artfully tied. And I immediately thought of Gene Kelly. Okay, so now the Hillary question. You are yourself very bright, intelligent, and talented. And you've lived in the shadow of a legend.
Right.
And now you're doing a lot of work. This interview and the work you're doing, which is still about him, do you feel still like he's overshadowing? Is there any desire like Hillary to say, here's what I do on my own?
No, and I love her, by the way. I mean, it was actually President Clinton who presented Gene with the National Medal of Arts, and which I was able to receive at the end of Gene's life. And it was interesting, and now that since we're being very honest here and open, and I promised I would do that, I was speaking in a school in Pittsburgh after Gene died, and a little boy raised his hand, and he said, you know, Mrs. Kelly, it's really been great. We really appreciate that you came here, and we've learned a lot about your husband and everything. But what happened to your own identity in the process? And I kind of went, ugh, and...
Wow.
15-year-old kid and a boy.
He'd ask the question better than I did, by the way. Yeah.
I had a young elementary school boy do the same. And I looked at the gentleman, the young college student who'd been driving me around and knew this was a bit of an issue. And I kind of hemmed and hawed. And the little boy said, oh, I'm sorry. I guess my question isn't very clear. And I said, oh, no, your question is spot on. I said, it's something I've had to grapple with every single day because I was known and had a career and was a public speaker. I was an extemporaneous speaker and had an identity certainly before I moved to be with Gene. And then suddenly you basically are a vapor and you don't exist. And you don't even have a name tag at a dinner party. You're a guest or plus one, or invitations come for plus one. And it was really not a world I ever... aspired to. I was such an academic that I never dreamed of going to Hollywood and marrying a legend. It was not on my radar. And in fact, Roddy McDowall, the great actor, was a friend of mine, and he said, "Oh my dear," he said, "you were like Alice falling down the rabbit hole." And it really was disorienting and very, I mean, your confidence is just zapped. And I think at parties, it was almost impossible. It was just kind of crushing. And I really didn't know how to handle it. I wasn't prepared for it. It wasn't a world. I came from Colorado. It wasn't my kind of background. And it took it really took going around the world to begin to talk to people and to connect with people and to listen to their stories. And I thought initially everyone would want to know how he made Singin' in the Rain.
Right.
And then they begin to say, well, how did he die? And how did you meet? And what was your life like? And was he romantic? And I thought, well, you want to know that? And then they were like, well, how did you feel? And what was this like for you?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, really? You want to know about that? And so the book, which was originally in Gene's voice, is now I'm finishing the memoir and I've put it in my own voice and I'm telling the story. And it was a way of kind of getting back into my own clothes and feeling much more confident in my voice. And this show has helped immensely because it's such a personal show, but it also reveals quite a bit about the two of us. And it's ostensibly about Gene, but you begin to understand why this relationship worked and what was extraordinary about it.
Patricia Ward Kelly is our guest. Her one-woman show is Gene Kelly, The Legacy, which will be at The Egg on Saturday, the 19th of September. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue with Rosemary Armeo. We're talking to Patricia Ward Kelly this morning, whose one-woman show is coming to The Egg. It is entitled Gene Kelly, The Legacy. It'll be at The Egg on Saturday, the 19th of September at 7:30.
You certainly know what audiences are interested in, what questions they have, and hopefully, as interviewers, we have a sense of that, too. And one of the questions that comes up is, given your time in his life, what was your relationship with his three children?
I think it's always hard. I think when you have multiple families, I mean, we really had essentially three families.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are even different dynamics between his first and second family and the third. And I think it's always very hard. I think it's always hard when you bring in a young woman, a young wife in any situation. I don't think it is limited to, celebrities and legends, but I think that adds another layer. And I think Gene was a man who on the screen appears extremely approachable and this immense personality. In fact, he was quite reclusive and really preferred his idea of a great time was to be at home in front of the fire reading a book and reading poetry or watching a movie and not one of his own. And so I think people perceive that he was incredibly accessible to his friends and family. And in fact, he really made all the decisions about that time. I think everyone wanted a part of Gene and wanted him in some way, and each had to kind of work out their own relationship with him. And I just had an unusual one. It was very hard for Gene because he had been so explicit in every interview Gene did. His wife died in 1973, his second wife, and I met him in 1985. And in every interview in that time before we met, he always said, "I will never get married again." And he had promised everyone, all of his family and all of his friends. I think it gave him a great deal of flexibility. And so he had to kind of come back and renege on that. And I think that's always hard. I think when you make that kind of definite statement, and he never expected to, I don't think he ever expected to fall in love. And I think he brought me out and it was a professional relationship and it grew and evolved. And so it was something that a lot of people kind of had to come to terms with in their own way. And I think a lot of people really began to understand it. And I think with the show, they understand why it works.
So did the children understand the relationship? Do they still, or do they feel a distance that they regret?
Boy, I don't,
without speaking for them, obviously.
Yeah, I couldn't. You'd have to ask. I mean, that's really their... That's what's nice about this, is that this is my story with him,
yeah.
And I think they're really entitled to their own, and they each had very special relationships with him, and as I say, there's quite a spread even between those families in age and everything, and so I would really leave that to them to say what evolved, because that's not my... It's not my place to say how they were with him.
And before I leave this completely, I will just ask simply, have any of them embraced the work and given their blessing?
They haven't not. I mean, I think they each do their own thing. Each celebrates him in their own way. And I think that's what's nice about it, is that one daughter has a show that she does that the money goes toward her preschool and things. So I think each has carved out their own relationship, and I think that's what each person in Gene's life has done. And I was the one that Gene chose for this. I was the one that he chose to tell his story. I was the one he designated as the trustee for his name, voice, and likeness. So I'm the sole person for those. I was the executor. So, and the children are beneficiaries. So I think, and their children were, the one is considerably older than I, and the others are roughly my age. So when we're talking about children, it's a different kind of thing. So I think they're each adults, and each are individuals and important individuals.
So when Gene Kelly died, did you say, I'll never marry again?
I've never said never. It was funny. Placido Domingo asked me...
to marry you.
No. No. He said, Patricia, you know, why have you not remarried? And I said to him, well, Placido, as far as I'm concerned, there were probably only three candidates. I said, there would be you, there would be Bill Clinton, and there would be the King of Spain. And I said, and as far as I can tell, not one of you is available. And he looked at me and he said, I will call the King of Spain. But it's a very hard act to follow. A lot of people are always asking, why haven't I married? And Gene is a huge figure. And I think you just don't run across... I mean, I swear that I think they made one and broke the mold. You just don't run across that kind of breadth of knowledge, that sensitivity, that kind of a gentleman, the humor... drop dead gorgeous. He was such a romantic in the way he viewed the world. And I think that also the work that I do, so much of what I do is encompasses him. I think it would take a very special person. That's why I named those three figures. It would take someone very confident in their own right that otherwise Gene is a pretty large presence in the room.
So I have two fanboy questions. One is about Anchors Away. What did he tell you about dancing with Jerry the Mouse of Tom and Jerry fame?
Well, he told me, interestingly, they had gone to... it was Stanley Donen who came up with the idea that Gene of dancing with an animated figure. And so Gene and Stanley went off to meet with Walt Disney, and Disney... said he thought it was a terrific idea, but he was too busy with a lot of the war materials. But he did put in a call back to MGM to endorse the project because he thought it was a great idea. And Hanna-Barbera was there at MGM, and so they worked it out. So instead of it being Mickey Mouse, it became Tom and Jerry. And it was very, very difficult. The camera operator got an ulcer shooting that particular number.
Wow.
It was, again, there had been very primitive live action and animation with Disney, but nothing to the magnitude of what Gene choreographed for that, that you would have that kind of dancing with an animated figure.
There are times when you can even look, and I may get letters for this, but you can look at Star Wars and say, wow, this looks old, whereas you can look at that scene shot in 1945 and it still looks perfect.
I think that's one of the reasons why, that's one of the reasons why this legacy is a particularly great legacy to be able to promote, because Gene is so contemporary. I mean, you look at him and he doesn't appear dated. He's hot. It's relevant. The kids get it. He's the go-to guy. He's really the person that if you talk to anybody on So You Think You Can Dance, Dancing with the Stars, all of the classical ballet dancers, the prime dancers in all the companies around the world, he's the person. And I think you've hit on that. I mean, I think part of it is because he was so far ahead of his time, it's still relevant now. Gene said to me once, he said, the difficult thing is to create something that is not only contemporary, but it's timeless. And I think today we know how to do something that's contemporary. We may sell a bunch of tickets to something now, but we're not going to be watching that 63, 70 years later.
Can I jump in?
Absolutely.
At the end, when you reach that kind of level that you're describing, and then you're declining, and you knew him at the end of his life, did he miss or did he decry any of the loss of, I don't know, flexibility or movement, mobility? How did he deal with that?
Well, he was, as I said, he really preferred not to be a performer. He really wanted to be behind the camera and creating things. And I think that one of the things, there was a, I think sad and that I did experience was there was a kind of ageism because Gene was still creating and his mind was going 100 miles an hour. But in Hollywood, the sense was that somehow at 80 years old, he wouldn't have a good concept. And one of the last things he wanted to do that we went to Michael Jackson's house. Gene wanted to do a musical with Michael, Frankie and Johnny, and with Arthur Mitchell and Dance Theater of Harlem doing a kind of Creole version of it. And it would have been superb. And Gene, I mean, I have his notes for it and the way he'd sit up late into the night and just scratching things out on yellow legal pads, going so fast. And it was a phenomenal idea. And I think truly Gene said to Michael, it was one of those magical moments. I mean, we were at the dinner table. Michael stood up at one end and recreated all of Gene's numbers from his television specials that most people have never seen. But he stood up and did Ball on the Jack and absolutely canting his hat and they mimicked it exactly. And Gene was on my right and stood up and was doing the numbers that he envisioned from Frankie and Johnny. And
wow.
It just, you know, those moments that you would love to. But Michael had too many handlers and too many people that didn't see Gene as being somebody on it, and so they missed that opportunity.
Patricia Ward Kelly is our guest. We're talking about her one-woman show, Gene Kelly, The Legacy.
Talk about Hollywood, and without getting too in the weeds here, but did Xanadu hurt that?
Xanadu, as Gene said, Xanadu was the only movie that he worked on that nobody knew what they were doing, and it was really, he was very angry about it because here's a kid who grew up in the Depression who really suffered because of that. And when he saw the tremendous waste of money, just expenditure with no script written. And in Xanadu, if you dare to rerun that, the number with Gene and Olivia Newton-John was not in the original. When they ran it in previews, the cards came back and said, where's the number with Gene and Olivia? So they had to shoot a number, and Gene, the producers were calling Gene, and he wouldn't take their phone calls. He was furious. And so finally, he agreed to come back on one condition, that the director and producer were not in the room. It was a closed set, and he would come back with the cinematographer, the camera operator, his dance assistant, and Olivia. And Gene created that number, and it's very distinct from the rest of the movie. So I don't know that damaged him in the sense of, that was 1980. I think it's just a sense, I mean, David Lean couldn't get a job. Here he'd done Lawrence of Arabia and Zhivago, and he couldn't get a picture off. And Richard Brooks, who had done In Cold Blood and Looking for Mr. Goodbar, he couldn't get a picture off. I think it was just a sense that somehow you're in your 80s and you suddenly get dumb or something. And I think these were the geniuses of them, and men, all people, men and women, way ahead of their time, and that's why they were creating classics. And I think that now, you know, people would, it's that old story of tell us what you have done, you know, come in and give us your resume, and with Fred Zinnemann and different people. And so I think there was a great loss with that. Madonna actually hired Gene to do the Girly Show. And he came on and was so excited about working on that. But I think really, in fact, she just wanted the name, and because he was eager to choreograph, and ultimately she fired him on that project. So
it could have been like Gaga and Bennett.
Could have been extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I ran into Robert Downey Jr., and I just went up to him, and I usually hate doing that, but I wanted him to know how much Jean admired him, and she thought Chaplin was extraordinary, and I said it to him, and he said, "Oh my gosh," he said, "you're not going to believe this. I was just in a conversation today, and I said that I wished that I had apprenticed with Gene Kelly." Mm-hmm. And that would have been a magical connection. You needed somebody who respected the mentorship. And
with that, there seems, in watching him, that there was the one thing that comes through is the joy. There is such joy. And I'm curious as to, I mean, obviously, it's a lot of work. It's very hard, huge, for all of the reasons that you mentioned, the athleticism, the choreography, the camera, getting other people to understand your vision and what you want to do. But what we see on that screen is pure joy. Do you think as he was doing it, or even watching it, that he felt that joy?
I think you started out on the right track. That it was it was an awful lot of work to make it look the way it looked,
right,
and to make it look effortless. But the work itself was really, really hard. And for example, it is true. There's so much mythology about Singing in the Rain, but that number, he was very, very sick. So he had a temperature of 103 shooting the Singing in the Rain number in a day and a half. He's ill. He's behind the camera. The great Rita Moreno and I were on the road for the 60th anniversary of Singing in the Rain, and somebody asked her about it, and she was on the set all the time, and she said, "Oh my God, he was in constant motion. He was behind the camera, then he'd jump in front of the camera, then he'd go back behind the camera, and he was, you know, he's got this fever, so he would go shoot a number, and then he would go outside the black tarpaulin and lie on the sidewalk and just burn the fever out of him." And so I think the joy, though, that's what people always attributed all these messages to what he was doing. You'll see books about it and these political meanings that were hidden and all of these things. And Gene said it was just to bring joy. And he knew how to do that. And he knew, but it was, he said, the hardest thing was to make it look as easy as it was. What you see on screen is joy. But that dance did not come out of joy. And his particular style of dance actually came out of his upbringing in Pittsburgh of being an outcast as an Irish Catholic. He was excluded from the fraternities at Penn State because he was Catholic. They were burning the crosses on the hill for Al Smith in 1928. And he was a lower middle class kid. And so all of the girls wanted to flirt with him and dance with him, but they wouldn't take him home to their parents because he wasn't considered acceptable material. And it stung. And it was something he decided, out of that kind of anger and rage at being excluded, he decided, "I don't want to dance like the rich people. I don't want to be on polished floors. I want to dance like somebody I know." And then he said, "How does the American male move?" And there was no model. He studied with Charles Wideman and Doris Humphrey, went to the Martha Graham studios, and looking for models and breaking away from the European tradition on ballroom floors. And what he ended up doing is said, okay, it's the American male. He moves like an athlete, like a baseball player or a hockey player. And so when you see Gene's dance, it's very low to the ground, wide, broad, open strokes. And the irony is it's out of kind of this discontent that he created such joy.
Well, the show is Gene Kelly, The Legacy. It'll be at the Egg in Albany on Saturday, the 19th of September. Patricia Ward Kelly, it's her one-woman show. What a great honor. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for letting me come in. I loved it.
Oh, this is great. Well, I'll look forward to seeing you on the 19th for the memoir on stage.
It's Patricia Ward Kelly's one-woman show, Gene Kelly, The Legacy, at the Egg in Albany, Saturday, September 19th at 7:30, theegg.org. For more information, theegg.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.